Imagine a church where every member is passionately, wholeheartedly, and recklessly calling the shots.
I have a busy work week, and by the time Sunday rolls around, I'm tired. So how about a church service that starts when I get there?
Can do. When you arrive, we begin.
This guy, he plays by his own rules. We want to find a church where if he starts screaming, we're not the bad guys, right?
Say no more. If your baby's screaming, you stay seated. The others around you can leave.
You know, financially, Sherry and I don't give a lot to the church, but we'd sure like to know who does.
All right, if you join now, you'll know what every person gives in detail.
When I'm in the church service, can my car get a buff and a wax?
Not just that, but an oil change and a tune-up.
Hey, how about tickets to the Super Bowl?
That's asking too much.
I'm serious. If I'm going to join, I want tickets to the big game.
All right, you join now and we'll get you there.
I like a pony.
Look in your backyard. Me Church, where it's all about you.
Good morning. I like that one because it seems really, really childish, and yet I think if a lot of folks were just to completely admit what they had in mind, a lot of that doesn't sound too bad, does it? Before we get rolling into the topic this morning, I want to remind everyone again of the youth rally coming up this Friday through Sunday. If you are a 6th through 12th grader and have not registered yet, please do that. It's helpful to us. Or if you're the parent or a grandparent or a neighbor or whatever of a 6th through 12th grader and you want to invite them to come along, send them to our website. They can learn all about it and register there. One change this year, I'm sure there are a lot of changes this year, but one change this year that I want to make sure that you're aware of as we're going into this, we have found with our registration list, and very honestly, I think you will find this in church in general. I've got some minister friends where we've been talking about the lack of men in church. With our registration list, we have a whole lot more girls registered than guys. Now, guys, this should be a hint to you that there's a lot of girls there, and it would be a good place to come and meet somebody. But I didn't say that out loud. But our issue there is housing, because there are a lot of girls and not as many guys. So what we're going to do this year, as a little experiment socially, I guess, is we are going to do the opposite of what we have normally done in the past, or at least what I've been told in the past, and we are going to have the girls here in the gym at the building and the guys in homes. Now, those of you with homes are immediately thinking, oh no, guys in my house. But there are a couple ways where this will be helpful. One being the layout of our congregation. There are more of you with the gender of people in your homes, that it will be easier to keep guys than girls, because we've already had a few that said they would love to keep people but couldn't keep girls. Secondly, the guys, as I have been told, and I've been to a youth rally or two or 150 or so, literally, at 10 years of youth ministry, I've been to a lot of youth rallies. The guys, I have been told, like to stay up all night here at the building, which makes it difficult to do the spiritual things we're attempting to do, where you listen and you're awake and things like that. So I'm hoping it might solve some of those issues as well. But if you don't like it, you can lay your blame right here at my feet, because it was my idea. I ran it by about four or five people here at church that all understood my logic, or at least smiled and nodded. So we're planning on doing that. So there are a couple things we need from you as a result of that. First, if you are a woman here at the church and you enjoy sleeping in a gym, we would love to have you come and offer that opportunity for you. So we do need some adult females to kind of keep an eye on things up here and make sure things are going well. And also, I have been assured by the adult females that will already be here, this is not an all-nighter. Okay, this is there will be a curfew, people will go to sleep. So don't feel like if you come here, you've got to be up all night long. Excuse me. Secondly, if you are willing to keep guys in your home, whether it be, and at the low end of this, we would say two, because we don't want anybody to be alone, but 2 to 10 or whatever you might be willing to keep at your home, there are sign-up lists on the bulletin board that is straight out this doorway, which also, as we're talking about this, is going to become news and sign-up central on that bulletin board. So if you're looking for news of what's going on or things you can sign up for, it'll be on that board right there. But if you would like to sign up for either of those things, please do that. A couple things you need to be aware of. If you're signing up for people at your home, tell me how many so I don't give them all to you. And then also, if you're signing up to stay here at the building, you don't have to do that Friday night and Saturday night. Now, if you do, I'm sure there is a special crown waiting for you. But if you could just do Friday or just do Saturday, that's fine. And we would be glad to have you come and help with that. So there are sign-up sheets for both of those. Make sure you're signing up for the right thing if you sign up. We're excited about the rally. We've got a little over 40 signed up so far, which is, I think, in around where we were last year at this time before the rally. I have learned that Oregonians like to wait, and they like to wait and wait and wait, and sometimes just show up at the door. So we're not going to turn people away, but we're looking forward to a good crowd here on Saturday and looking forward to good things in that weekend. All right, if you'd like to turn your Bibles to Mark chapter 9, If you are visiting with us this morning, we'll get you up to date on where we're at. We've been looking at the book, I Am a Church Member by Tom Rainer. Tom Rainer is an expert on church life. He does a lot of surveying, a lot of consulting with churches on how they can do things better. And in his work, he came up with this list of six things that he thought a church member should be. They're all very scripturally based. And so we've been looking at those six things. We're about to go to the third one this morning. We bought several copies of the books for folks to read, and some have done that and have communicated to us that they've really enjoyed the thoughts in it. I noticed there's one that has made its way back on the table in the back, so if you'd like to be the first to grab that today, feel free. But so far, we have talked about, I will be a functioning church member in the first week, and then 2 weeks ago, we talked about, I will be a unifying church member. Today, in keeping with the Super Bowl, I almost grabbed a helmet on the way out of the house because I thought I might need it. Because today, I will not let church be about my desires and preferences, which is why we watched the video we watched this morning. Now, I will admit, I will probably step on some toes today. I will also admit, in reading this chapter, I found my toes being stepped on today. I found a lot of things in here that are very difficult for me because I think we have grown up, a lot of us, in churches where we have seen this play out a lot. And I don't know the full history here. I've got about 5 months now of history here to see how things go. But everywhere you go, people have a way they like things. People have a way that they would do it if it were up to them. And the trouble in church a lot of times is it's not necessarily up to me. So how things unfold can be good or bad in my eyes. It's a lot like family, isn't it? Are you ever in that big family group and things that are decided are not the way that you would decide them? I remember going to Christmas at my wife's family's place when her grandfather was still alive out at the farm in Nebraska. And there were over 20 people there, I believe. I don't remember the exact number. People on air mattresses all over the place, like the gym will be in a little while. People just on top of people. And I remember thinking to myself, there are so many things going on during the course of this week that are not the way I would have done it. I grew up an only child. And you can imagine all that goes with that. I was the only grandchild until age 13. Our largest family gathering before I went to this Christmas with my wife, Sammy, involved, I believe, 8 people. And that was a big, big gathering where we had to get the leaf out for the table and things like that. And I did not completely comprehend what it is to have to adjust. I didn't have a sibling I had to deal with. I didn't have all those things. And so my way, a lot of times, was the way it would go. And in church is where I started to learn about this principle. Because there are things that are not the way that I would do them. Even this morning, you have probably already experienced this. For those of you who have come to class, you might have gone through the lesson in the class this morning and thought to yourself, that is not the direction I would have gone with this. And others of you would have gone through that class and said, this is the most life-changing 45 minutes I have ever had. This has just been great. I'm a new person today because of this. Same exact class. There will be those of you that will sit through the songs this morning, hopefully participating with the songs, and think to yourself, where did these songs come from? Who wrote these songs so many hundreds of years ago? And there were others of you that would think to yourself, I haven't heard that song in so long. I love that we sang that song today. we have a different way of looking at things. And we tend to see things through the prism of how I like it versus how you like it, because that's the way our world operates. And especially here in our nation, that's the way we operate. You get things the way you want them, and you get the things the way you want them in the time you want them right away, or it gets fixed, and it gets fixed quickly. And it's hard to leave that at the glass doors when you walk in, isn't it? It's hard to leave that behind because we are so geared that way as a culture, and yet that is not how church works. Membership means, sorry about the typo there, demanding children cannot become demanding adults. And I think we have all seen the demanding child, haven't we? We've all seen that child that needs just a slight bit more correction than they're getting. We encounter them in restaurants. We encounter them in movie theaters. I went with our family in Alabama when we went to visit my mom one time. I went with our family and my mom, and we went to the movie theater. And we were splurging. It was Christmas time. We went to the movies. We all got popcorn. We all got drinks. The grand total of the whole thing, if I remember right, was $81 for our family of five people to be there at the movie. And from about 2 minutes into the movie, I began to feel the kick on the back of my chair. And it was almost in rhythm. It kept going so well. And it went for the entire hour and 42 minutes of the movie. I remember doing the passive-aggressive kind of look every now and then and thinking, surely they will get the message that I'm not just turning for no... No, they're just kicking. A lot of talking going on in the movie. And I thought to myself, $81. $81 down the drain as all I'm just getting this back massage from a two-year-old back here. And I thought, do something. And then I find myself in a movie not too long after that, Grown-Ups behind me, in a very, very similar experience. And I thought to myself, you're Grown-Ups, not supposed to do this. Do we not see a lot of kids just continuing that into adulthood? And I think in church, it's really easy for us to get there too. In Mark chapter 9, where I had you open a second ago, they left the place and passed through Galilee. Jesus did not want to know and did not want anyone to know where they were, because he was teaching his disciples. He said to them, "The Son of Man is going to be delivered into the hands of men. They will kill him, and after 3 days, he will rise." This is a big moment in Jesus' teaching, where he is talking about his death that is coming. Very serious moment of conversation, something he's sharing with them that's very important. Very difficult, by the way, I would imagine, for Jesus to have to think about this. He knows it's coming. He knows it's going to be incredibly unpleasant. He knows it's not something that he's excited about necessarily, but it is part of the plan. And he's telling his disciples about it. But they did not understand what he meant and were afraid to ask him about it. They came to Capernaum. When he was in the house, he asked them, "What were you arguing about on the road?" But they kept quiet because on the way they had argued about who was the greatest. What a childish argument. You ever seen kids out on the playground? You know, if you will do this, I'll be your best friend. And you would think we would leave that behind somewhere along the way, and yet we grab on to those kinds of arguments. These disciples who have just learned about what Jesus is going to do, how he's going to sacrifice, how he will overcome death, the kind of thing that honestly, if you were being presented with for the first time, would cause a pretty serious theological discussion to go on. What does he mean? How is he going to lead us if he's going to die? And what is he talking about that he's going to, there's going to be a resurrection? How does that work? We've not seen that before. We've got so many questions to ask, but we're afraid to ask the questions. And since we don't understand any of this and the questions are too hard to ask, which one of us is best? Who's going to be the best among us? I mean, there's 12 of us here. Somebody's got to be number one. Who's it going to be? And I think to myself, what in the world? What in the world? We will see it later today. There's a game, if you haven't heard, going on later today. We will see it later today, I'm sure. People handling themselves well during the course of this game and people handling themselves not so well during the course of this game. We will see it on the field with grown adults. either acting very composed or very not composed, whether they're players or coaches. We will see it in people's homes, and they will put those videos on YouTube later for people to laugh at, of how they react to the things that happen. I remember a year or two ago, Jimmy Kimmel, who has a talk show on TV, he issued a challenge to people to take the remote from the TV and wait till a very big moment in the Super Bowl and turn it off. And to have video going to catch people's reaction. And you want to talk about reaction? He got exactly what he was looking for. And people were flipping out, wanting to know why the TV would turn off. There was one wife that had way too much fun with this and had a second remote and kept doing it throughout the game at different times. Her husband got more and more mad as this would happen. And I think to myself, we will act childish over silly things, and yet do we not do that here too? Do we not do that in churches all around too? I remember a woman in a church that I went to when I was in junior high who dared to bring a cup of coffee into the auditorium. Dared. A cup of coffee. And I know we're in the Northwest, and you walk a block in any direction and you can get coffee, but that was a big deal in southern Alabama, apparently. And I didn't understand this as a ninth grader. I was watching this whole thing unfold and thinking, what's wrong here? She went to the elders about this woman with the cup of coffee. The elders called this woman in about her cup of coffee. And I remember hearing all of this and just thinking to myself, what planet am I on? It's a cup of coffee. Now, are we in a different day and time than we were then, or than we were the first time you set foot in a church building? Absolutely. Are there places we have probably gotten a little too casual with things? Maybe so. I don't know. I will tell you, if I started to lose this part of the outfit somewhere along the way, I'm not going to be sad. To leave the coats behind, just come up here in a shirt and slacks and everybody's fine, it's okay with me. Are there things we do differently than we once did? Yes. Yes, there are. I talk to minister friends who I tell that I very rarely will wear a tie here, and they are so jealous of me. And they wonder, how do you, you know, what sort of Bible study do you have to go through to pull that off? And it's silly sometimes, isn't it, the things we get caught up on? And yet we look at the disciples and we get mad at them and we think they're childish because they're having this discussion about who is the greatest. And we have the same kind of discussions all the time. Why is this thing there? Why do we do this? Why do we do that? Who does he or she think she is? And we get so caught up on these little things. And yet they want to keep quiet because when they're called on it, they realize what they've done. And this is where my toes started getting stepped on in the chapter, because I thought to myself, I can harp on you all day long, or I can harp on any random church I walk into that has the same issues all day long, but I do it too. There are things I would like a particular way too, and it's tough on me sometimes because a lot of those things I probably could make happen if I really wanted to push. And yet it's not about my likes or preferences either. That's not the point here. So they kept quiet on the way because they'd argued about who was the greatest. Sitting down, Jesus called the 12 and said, anyone who wants to be first must be the very last and the servant of all. Now the word servant is found 58 times in the New Testament. The word serve 57 times. Now I won't get into this morning how many times you will find prayer or fasting or baptism or confession. I will tell you, aside from Jesus and the fact that he goes and prays a lot, the rest of those words, you will find them less times than this. Especially things we harp a lot on, like singing or baptism or things like that. We've missed the servant thing somewhere along the way. Sometimes I wish that they would have made it 6 steps instead of 5 steps when somebody came up with all that and had serve in there somewhere. Because it is all over the New Testament that we are called to serve and be servants. And do you know what happens when I serve and when I'm a servant? The stuff that I want goes into the background. The stuff that I want is not as important anymore. Now, is it still frustrating and difficult at times? Yes, it is. And if you have completely solved this in your mind, maybe you should be up here right now doing this part, because I haven't. There are still times where I struggle with, I would rather do it this way or rather do it that way. And he says, you've got to become a servant if you want to be first. I'm always taken back to kindergarten. I can't remember if I told you guys this one yet or not, but in kindergarten, they used to give us candy bars. Horrible idea for kindergarten. They would give us these candy bars, and they were trying to teach us the idea of sharing. And so they would pair us off, and they would hand one of the candy bar, and they would say, split this in half, and you would. And the first time you did this, you might split this with a really big half and a really small half, thinking to yourself, I'm taking the big half. But once they paired you off and one person would split it in half, the other person then chose the half they would take. And you learned very quickly as a kindergartner to get this thing as close to the middle as humanly possible, because you want as much chocolate as you can get. I think we have lost that philosophy somewhere along the way in church life. It's, I want it this way, and the way I want it makes complete sense, because otherwise I wouldn't want it that way. And so if you don't get there yet, it's either I haven't done a hard enough job of convincing you, or you're just not very bright. And we would never say that out loud and actually think it, but our logic is communicating that to people, which is tough. We don't want to communicate that to people. We want to communicate the love of God to people. We want to communicate who Jesus is. We want to be servants. Membership means we must be servants. Turn over to Ephesians chapter 3, or if you want to read along on the screen. The mystery is that through the gospel, the Gentiles are heirs together with Israel, members together of one body, and sharers together in the promise in Christ Jesus. I became a servant of this gospel by the gift of God's grace given me through the working of his power. Have you ever considered the fact that you have a role in all of this? One, that it's a gift, but two, that that gift is to become a servant. That's not usually the kind of gift that you want. If you're there at Christmas morning opening your packages and you get a big box and someone's playing a joke on you, and then you have a smaller box inside that one, a smaller box inside that one, and you finally get down somewhere and there's a little piece of paper rolled up and you unroll it and it says, you can be a servant. Not an exciting day. And yet that's what we are called to be, because when we serve, we are being like Jesus. Although I am less than the least of all the Lord's people, this grace was given me to preach to the Gentiles the boundless riches of Christ. Although I'm less than the least. Now, I think we have times when we think of ourselves in this way. And honestly, what we're doing there probably is going too far in the wrong direction with this, where we think of ourselves as worthless and don't think of ourselves as being all that important or anything else. God values us, and we are his children, but at the same time, we are called to look at the people around us and to be concerned about their wants, their desires, their needs, instead of mine. How many times have we run across people who leave churches, and one of the reasons they leave is, I was just not getting what I needed there. Those people, they were unfriendly, they were hypocritical. I went for 4 weeks and no one said anything to me. It's all about me. It's all about what I want, what I need. And how many times have we instead thought about, who did I say something to this morning? Who did I reach out to today? How am I trying to make a difference in someone else's life instead of being overly concerned about mine? And what you will find in the wisdom of the way that God set this up is when you do those things, you find that stuff coming back to you anyway. How many times have you gone to do something nice for someone else and left uplifted by it? How many times have you gone to serve and really felt like you were somehow better? Made better because of it. Your day was better because of it. You left with a smile on your face, something that would have been a job otherwise. How many times are you happy to do something at someone else's house that you would never do at your own? We had a group of people up here painting in the youth room a couple weeks ago, and I thought if you were to just grab your teenager and wake them up very early one morning and hand them a paintbrush and say, I need you to get to work on this room, they would probably look at you like you were out of your mind. And yet they'll come up here and paint a room. We are called to serve, and God in his wisdom understands that is who we need to be and what we need to do. Now, Rainer, I mentioned to you a while ago, he is an expert on church life. He does a lot of surveys, does a lot of visits to churches, does a lot of consulting with churches. They took a survey on what they consider to be inwardly focused churches, which is they're not reaching out. They're concerned about things that are going on inside. I had a preacher friend that referred to these as family reunion churches. Seemed like everything was kind of geared toward family needs, and not that those things aren't important, but that is not our primary goal, I hope. And here's some things he found.
They had worship wars. Now, we would never call these wars, but they had disagreements on how they do worship. And I think we see this a lot around us in our culture today. I feel like here at Eugene, we're pretty good about being able to worship together. But at the same time, I would imagine some of us sit here thinking to ourselves, all right, I'd rather do it this way. I'd rather that guy talk for much less time, sing a couple more songs. I'd rather, whatever it might be, more video, less that guy, any things that we might have. We have these thoughts about how worship should be. And a lot of times we'll get in debates about how we should worship, what's okay, what's not okay, all those things. And somewhere along the way, we lose sight of the fact of, why are we worshiping in the first place? It's God. It's all about God. We are here to worship Him. And have I considered the fact that maybe that song that is not my favorite is His, if He can have a favorite song? It's about God. And so these people in the inwardly focused churches have worship wars. They have prolonged meetings. I don't know what this means to you, but a lot of churches are an awful lot about meetings. I have a good friend whose entire philosophy of life is less meetings. And he will not get into anything that involves having more meetings. But we have too many meetings sometimes, or long meetings. There is a focus on the facility. Now, I know we have, and by the way, my friend Nathan, who came to visit with us last week, he was blown away by the facility here and thought there's just a lot of potential for things you could do in this town just based on the facility. But at the same time, if you think about the last five things you got mad about at church, I don't want a list. Keep it to yourself. But if you were to think about the last five things you got mad about at church, I would challenge you to consider how many of them dealt with the facility. Okay, I don't like that thing hung there. I don't like this room being used in this way. I miss the pews. Whatever it might be that's in your head of, I can't see that guy's face because of the lighting. The things that we get upset about are so facility-driven sometimes, and it was never intended to be that way. It should have never been about the building. It's about the things that the building is a tool for us to do. And yet we get so caught up in things about the facility. What should it be? How should it be? And most of us have some opinion of how that is and have a hard time letting go of that opinion. It's program-driven. We have this tendency to think that if I'm going to do something as a Christian, then the church puts it on that bulletin board right out there and tells me what time to be there, and then I will go and do that thing. We are Christians all the time. This is who we are and what we do, and so people should be able to see that about us as much as they see anything about us. I have seen very quickly on my Facebook feed this week who the Seahawks fans are, or at least who the Seahawks bandwagon people are, one of the two. People wear that out on their sleeve. They show you who they are. And we are to be that outside of here. We're inwardly focused in the way we spend our money. And that's a challenge because we have a lot of things that we cannot help but spend. We talked in the meeting last week about power and things like that. You've got to spend some of that. And again, this is the point in the chapter. As I'm getting to some of these, it's really stepping on my toes because it challenges my thinking. It challenges what my immediate thoughts are on things we should do or how it should be or where the money should go. Inordinate demands for pastoral care. We don't use pastoral much, but this is the demand you may have on me or the elders or even the deacons of people here and what you expect that we should do or shouldn't do, how our time should be spent, stuff like that. Everybody has this assumption that that the minister works on Sundays and Wednesdays, things like that. Not really that way. And I think all of us are willing to do a lot of things to help and to be there and to try to be some sort of thing to point people towards God or to make situations easier. But how many people have we heard leave churches because didn't like the preacher? The preacher never talked to me, didn't act like I existed. The preacher didn't understand me. I was sick and the preacher didn't come to visit me. I had a good friend at another church that the minister did not come to visit him when he was in the hospital. Problem was, no one at the church knew he was in the hospital. He was a low-key guy, didn't like a lot of attention, and so he intentionally did not let anyone know he was in the hospital. It's very secret, just his family knew. And that's fine. I got no problem with that. If you want to be that's the way I would be. I'm wearing that gown. I want no one there. I would be like that, and yet at the same time, because I'm like that, I'm not going to be mad if Norm doesn't come say hi to me, because Norm didn't even know I was there. we have these demands that we tend to put on people. And we don't just do it in church, but church is one of the places that it tends to rear its ugly head at some times. We have attitudes of entitlement. You remember back to the first week of this, we talked about people viewing this like it's a country club membership. There are things you get that are benefits of that, and we start to feel entitled about it. We view it less like a gym membership sometimes. I was a YMC donor for about a year. I had a membership. I went for a month and kept that membership going because I thought, oh, I'll get back there. A lot of people probably treat church like that too. But it's not about entitlement. It's not about the things that I should get when I come through the door. We have greater concern about change than the gospel. Now, this goes both directions, by the way. Some of us can get so enamored about something we want to do differently because we think it's the next thing that if we could just do that, everything will be fine. The push within the churches of Christ right now with this, music. Instrumental music. Now, I do not have a Church of Christ background. I started going to the Church of Christ when I was eighth grade, whatever age I was at that point. And so for me, this is kind of weird because I actually chose all of this. I don't get the desire to go have music because if I wanted that, I could drive a block down the road somewhere and get that. But a lot of people are convinced that if we can just do this thing, then we will grow. And I hate to tell you this, but there's a lot of dying instrumental churches out there. And I don't want to just pick on music because it could be any number of things. I hope that when we put the chairs in, and I like the chairs, by the way, but I hope when the chairs are put in, the thought process was not, just have chairs, then we could grow. If we could just have better looking carpet, then we could, if we could just one screen in the middle instead of off to the side, if we could just do this, if we could just hire that preacher, then we can grow. And I hate to tell you this, but none of those are the magic bullet. Because churches have tried all of those things, and they don't work. They might work for a little while, but they don't work long term. Because it's about who we are as Christians and what kind of family we're going to be when people come in here. What kind of family we are to people out there during the week. How do they see Christianity as a result of us? So on the one hand, it's the change in that direction. On the other hand, we could be at the other side of that equation, which is hanging on for dear life, not wanting anything to move half a step forward. And I feel okay talking about this because I've been there too. I didn't like these when we first got them. I thought this was going to lead to something else. What's the next thing going to be after the projector and the screen and we don't use songbooks and people are going to forget how to sing four-part harmony? And all the stuff that you have heard along the way. I was there too, and I get it. Either side of change can take focus away from what it is we're here to do, which is the gospel. The kind of change we should be concerned about is our lives changing. Not is the logistics of how we do things changing, not is where people are sitting changing. Our lives being changed. You see anger and hostility. Now this one is tough because you do not see it on the surface because we hide things well. How many marriages have we seen that fall apart and you had no idea there was anything going on? How many families seem really together here and they get in the car? I knew a teenager one time that said when they got in the car to leave church, that's when the yelling started. And all the way home, it was just bitter yelling and language you would never hear at church. And then at church, everybody put the smiles back on. We hide anger and hostility pretty well. And we have anger and hostility about a lot of these things that we have just listed. Things are not going in a direction I want them to go. There's some sort of agenda here, whatever it might be, and we get angry about it. And we have, because of all of these things, I think, an apathy about evangelism. We don't want to reach out, maybe because we're so concerned about these other things that takes our focus away. Maybe because we see the way these other things play out and we think to ourselves, what if I invite somebody and it's one of those days where all that stuff is happening? And they see just how dysfunctional we are and they don't really want to be a part of that. I talked to Dave and Katie a couple weeks ago and they were talking about wanting to be members here. And I said, you understand what a mess we are, right? And Dave nodded and smiled just like he's now and said, absolutely. I understand. And that's why we want to be a part of this. We're not trying to hide something here. We're a mess. And yet we're this mess that God makes something out of. And that's the wonder of God and who he is. Moving along, membership means striving to have the mind of Christ. And I don't want to steal Mike's thunder on Wednesday nights coming up here in Philippians 2. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Think again of those five last things that made you angry when it came to church, or frustrated or sad or whatever it might be, and think of how many of them had to do with ambition or conceit, or as we see in the next verse, a lack of humility. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. I think of Jesus and the amount of teaching he did around the temple courts. How difficult would it be to be standing in that building that was built for you by people hundreds of years before and to see how wrong it was being done? And he did have that moment where he goes in and he starts flipping over tables, which, by the way, was not done in just a moment of anger, because he went out and fashioned the whip that he was going to do things with and got the cords. He has this moment where he starts turning the tables and does everything differently, but yet he walks into the temple and has a great deal of patience with a lot of people and what they've turned things into. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. In your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus, who, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped. There's a line missing there, sorry. Something to be used to his own advantage, depending on the translation that you have. He didn't take equality with God as his poker chip, as his bargaining tool. Now, what would we use for that today? Well, I'm the preacher here, and that's how it's going to be. Or I'm one of the elders here, and we have spoken, and that's how it's going to be. Or I have been here since the day this place opened, and that's how it's going to be. Or I made that thing, or had that idea, and that's how it's going to be. Now, do all those things matter? Absolutely. Do all those things demand a bit of respect? They should. But are all those things the end all on how everything takes place? No. Because I hate to tell you this, there could be two of you that have been here since the doors were open. I would guess there are a lot more than two of you that have been here since the doors were open. And you might not agree on something. And how do we use that bargaining tool then? He did not consider this something to use as a bargaining tool, to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing. Nothing. I hope I'm not going to tell too much here. I mentioned the wall that was painted in the foyer. I walked into the meeting of a committee about the foyer, and knowing colors already in my mind. And I remember walking into this meeting and thinking to myself, I really don't like this color that they're going to go with. And beyond that, thinking to myself, I really think this is a bad idea. Because I just came from a church that built a new building and put a foyer in and everything, and I saw the good things about it, and I saw the bad things about it. And I thought to myself, if I could somehow keep you from making the mistakes I just watched a church make and doing the positive things I just saw a church do, I would like to help you do that, hopefully not making it about me at the same time. Because I really didn't think it was a good idea, personally. But at the same time, I remember walking into that meeting, and I said to Denise, who's not in here, so I can use her name. I said to Denise before I walked in the meeting, I don't know what they're going to do, and I'm going to try very hard not to say very much, and I don't know if I accomplished that or not. I don't know what they're going to do, but if we come out of this meeting and every wall in the foyer is purple, which, by the way, was not their color choice, but if every wall in this foyer is purple, I will continue to do what I do. I will walk in here. I might look at the purple walls and shake my head, I'll be honest with you. But then I will walk in here, we will worship together, we will do what we do, I will walk back out into the royal foyer, and we will be there together, and it's okay. And it is so hard to get to yourself to that point that it's okay. It's okay if everything is not exactly as it once was. It's okay if everything is not the way I would have chosen it. It's okay if I'm on that committee and I get outvoted. It's okay, because none of that is what it's about. None of that is what really matters. What matters is the good news, the gospel. He made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man. He humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. You want to talk about someone who should have been in a committee meeting looking for a different option? This is the guy. This is not the easy way to go about it. There should be an easier, better plan. And yet, this is the plan that the Father had in mind. And so he went along. I'm a church member. I will not let my church be about my preferences and desires. That is self-serving. I am a member in this church to serve others and to serve Christ. My Savior went to a cross for me. I can deal with any inconveniences and matters that aren't my preference or style. Because in the end, they're inconsequential. They just don't really matter a whole lot. I may be here for 5 years. I may be here until the day I retire. This building may be here for your great-grandchildren, or they might have moved to another area of town just like you guys did 30 years ago. Stuff passes away. People move on, and the gospel remains. And it's time as Christians that we start living lives that say that. And so the little things don't matter all that much. Now this morning, it's kind of a weird one leading an invitation, I'll admit to you, because no one wants to admit to any of this. But I think in our hearts, and maybe this is not the time where you come up here, maybe this is the time where you just need to pray a little bit later, and me too, by the way, maybe we just need to pray a little bit about there are things in church life that we have made a mountain out of, and we need perspective. There are things in church life that we are just so absolute about that have nothing to do with Scripture, and we need perspective. There are people that we have handled in the wrong way because we have had a difference of opinion, and we need to make those things right. And I would encourage you today, pray about that. If it's a person, seek that person out and have that conversation. Or if there is a need that you need to make public, if there's something that we can pray about with you, if you would like to become a Christian this week, we would love to be a part of that too. Whatever need you may have, please come as we stand and sing.